We're going to go on to case number three, and that is appeal number 012993, Nissan North America versus Jim Milady Olds. And Mr. Gioli?
Gioli, that's right. May it please the court, my name is James Gioli, and I represent the defendant appellant Jim Milady Olds, Incorporated, doing business as Jim Milady Nissan. This is an appeal of the district court's order granting Nissan's petition to compel arbitration and denying Milady's Rule 59e motion to alter or amend that judgment. The district court compelled arbitration after specifically entering an order that it would deal only with a pending Rule 12 motion to dismiss or stay the petition to compel arbitration. The district court had initially, on March 6th of 2001, entered a briefing schedule on the merits of the petition to compel arbitration. But on March 13th, 2001, the district court entered an order striking the briefing schedule, entering a new briefing schedule, and specifically ordering the parties to address only the Rule 12 motion. The Rule 12 motion, by the way, concentrated on arguments of abstention, res judicata, and other preclusion arguments, threshold issues, in other words. At the hearing on March 13th, the district court explored the utility of considering the petition to compel arbitration on its merits, along with the Rule 12 motion simultaneously, or in the alternative, considering only the Rule 12 motion first as a threshold issue. And the transcript from the March 13th hearing revealed that this issue was thoroughly explored and argued by the parties to the district court. The district court unambiguously held at the hearing that it made more sense to deal with the Rule 12 motion first because, if the motion were granted, as the court said, quote, we won't be here. And then, if Nissan survives the Rule 12 motion, to deal with the petition on the merits. And that's the ruling that's reflected in the district court's order of March 13, 2001. After that point, Nissan filed a response brief to the Rule 12 motion. Milady filed a reply brief. In June 21, 2001, the district court issued its decision in this case. It denied the Rule 12 motion and then summarily granted the motion to compel arbitration. The district court's own opinion reveals its error. The court treats the Rule 12 motion in full. Certainly Milady disagrees with the court's reasoning and holding, but it does rule on the Rule 12 motion, which of course dealt with primarily the Colorado River abstention argument and res judicata. The court then turns to the petition to compel arbitration on its merits, cites the decision of the arbitrator, which was never at issue before the district court in earlier briefing, and summarily grants the petition. Milady concluded that the district court inadvertently, perhaps, believed that something akin to cross motions for summary judgment were before it, or that somehow had not reviewed the minute order it had entered on the briefing schedule. And so Milady timely made a Rule 59e motion to bring this error to the court's attention. At the hearing on the Rule 59e motion, the district court, there's colloquy between the district court judge and counsel for Milady, where counsel is attempting to explain what the nature of the error is. And the district court appears to have confused the nature of the defenses set forth in the Rule 12 motion, preclusion, abstention, and the actual merits defenses against this petition. Counsel specifically stated that there were defenses to the petition based on a challenge to the making of the agreement, where the making of the agreement is construed to include the validity and enforceability, the existence of the agreement, because of the defense that the agreement had expired.
But the bottom line is, you admitted that you signed Amendment 4.
That is true.
So, Milady, I mean, what more? I mean, I understand that the court should have, I believe the court should have allowed a response, but the bottom line was you signed that amendment.
That's true, but that does not dispose of the issue, Judge Williams. As Milady's defense would have established at the district court level, and as our brief does establish, this court in Matterhorn specifically held that, as the Federal Arbitration Act uses the phrase the making of the agreement. And let's just remember the standard. If the making of the agreement be in issue, then the defendant is entitled to a jury trial on that issue if a jury demand is timely filed.
Well, you made mention in your brief of an oral agreement between
Malati,
I'm sorry, and Nissan that replaced and or superseded the previous agreement between the parties after that July 14th date. Does Malati intend to show that this oral agreement expressly abandoned Amendment 4?
Malati intends to show two things. Number one, that Amendment 4 expired, and with it expired the arbitration clause. Number two, the parties continue to do business to this day because Malati is still selling Nissan. There is some kind of contract in place between the parties. It's oral, and Nissan admits that in the sense that Nissan itself argues that Malati did not adopt or that there was no written agreement adopting the alternatives that were presented in the summer of 2000 after Amendment 4 expired. So, yes, there is an agreement in place. It is oral. It contains no arbitration clause. There is not even an implication that the parties intend the current oral agreement to include an arbitration clause. None of the negotiations for what was going to be the next written agreement, none of the draft agreements included an arbitration clause. None of the options that Malati was presented with included arbitration clauses.
So your bottom line answer to me when I ask you if the oral agreement expressly abandoned Amendment 4 is yes.
Yes.
Okay.
and indeed, Your Honor, if you look at the Matterhorn case or the Sphere Drake case, you see examples where this kind of situation is looked at. And in Matterhorn in particular, there were two agreements, an initial universal agreement that had an express arbitration clause and a subsequent purchase order that had checkoff boxes in which one could check off that the universal agreement, the initial one, was going to be incorporated by reference. The seller in that case contended that it inadvertently neglected to check off the universal box. The buyer did not check off the box. After the buyer signed the purchase order, the seller, after the fact, checked off the universal box. And what the court looked at was this issue of whether the arbitration clause from the first agreement could somehow be read into the second agreement. And it really raised both of the issues that are at stake in this case. One is the general one. Does the arbitration clause survive some form of expiration or superstition? And number two, the specific question of what is required in order to demonstrate that the parties have relegated to the arbitrator the question of arbitrability, because both were at issue in Matterhorn. And what the court made two important observations in Matterhorn. Number one, that it really doesn't matter what the reason for the end of the first agreement is. It could be expiration. It could be superstition. It could be novation. If the defense is that the agreement is no longer in existence, then the defendant or the respondent to the petition to compel arbitration has at least shown an entitlement to have a court decide whether the court or the arbitrator is to decide arbitrability. And if that can be shown as a fact issue, then indeed the respondent has the right to a jury trial on the issue, to findings of fact. And there was a jury trial in the Matterhorn case. The simple expression from the Sphere Drake case, no contract, no power, really summarizes Malati's position in this case. What Nissan has tried to do is bootstrap Malati into arbitration without allowing Malati the opportunity, both because of the district court's procedural mistake, but also in substance under the Federal Arbitration Act, the opportunity to demonstrate that there are issues of fact here as to whether the parties committed the question of arbitrability to the arbitrator, and number two, assuming they did not, whether the arbitration clause in place survived the expiration of Amendment 4 and would therefore govern this dispute. We're not here telling this court that these questions have been conclusively resolved. In fact, that's the whole point. That's why the district court's procedural error was so was so damaging to us and is reversible error. You don't have the record to know that. What you do have, though, from the record is a very substantial showing of evidence that these questions are in dispute, that there are genuine issues of fact here. You have Nissan's own admission in its October 3rd letter to Malati, October 3rd, 2000, saying, we are in dispute, we're giving you a notice of termination under the agreement, you have a right to proceed before the Illinois Motor Vehicle Review Board. You have a right to do that. There's nothing in the letter mentioning arbitration, one way or the other. Now, after the fact, on appeal, Nissan explains that the statute required it to include that wording. But the statute did not prohibit it from saying, nonetheless, you've agreed to arbitrate. Moreover, Nissan did say these words. Let a trier of fact determine whether that means that Nissan has waived the right to arbitration. Let a trier of fact determine whether that is probative on the issue of whether Amendment 4 had expired. We have also demonstrated, and I just want to bring to the Court's attention, that under the first options case, on the question of who gets to decide arbitrability, there is a heightened standard. There must be clear and unmistakable evidence that the parties committed that question to the arbitrator. Now, in the procedural posture we are in today, there's yet another standard that overlays that one. Is there a question of fact about whether there was clear and unmistakable evidence that the parties intended to commit the question of arbitrability to the arbitrator? That is not a very hard standard for Malati to meet on appeal. And I would suggest that the evidence in the record that I've mentioned and is cited in our brief more than amply shows the Court that we should have at least had the chance to demonstrate that at the district court level. Finally, we've made the arguments concerning Colorado River abstention in our brief. My time is about expired, so I'm going to conclude at this point and reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Ms. Link.
May it please the Court. Malati's appeal boils down to whether the district court correctly held that the arbitrator must decide Malati's defenses to arbitrability. Malati thinks so little of its jurisdictional abstention argument that it relegates it to the end of its brief and doesn't even mention it here in oral argument. It has no colorable due process claim. It raised its defenses to arbitrability in its verified answer. The district court considered those defenses and it ruled on them, holding that as a matter of law, they presented issues for the arbitrator to decide.
Here's the problem that I, for one, see. Judge Guzman expressly told Malati and Nissan to brief only the motion to stay. And he suspended briefing on all other issues. Assuming that we agree with Judge Guzman about the stay, shouldn't we be remanding to allow the parties to brief the merits of the request to compel arbitration? Wasn't Malati misled about what Judge Guzman was going to decide?
Your Honor, you shouldn't remand for two separate reasons. First of all, even putting aside the issue of whether Malati was misled, in this court's opinion in the health services case that we cite in our brief, in one of the footnotes, the court said that in Federal Arbitration Act cases, that on issues of arbitrability where they can be decided as a matter of law, this court can decide them on the first instance in appeal. Similarly, in the Moses H. Cone case, the Supreme Court held that the Fourth Circuit did not err in deciding issues of arbitrability on the first time in appeal. The reasons for those holdings seem to be the policy underlying the act to get these issues resolved speedily when they can be resolved as a matter of law. Secondly, Malati was not misled here. On March 6th, the district court issued an order ordering Malati to respond to Nissan's petition. about 8 hours after it received that order, which suggested that it would have a single response to Nissan's petition, it filed its verified answer raising its defenses to arbitrability. At the time that it filed that verified answer, it was well aware that that could be its only chance to respond. And so, mindful of what the district court did, Malati knew what it was doing and the risks that it was taking when it filed its verified answer raising those defenses. I'm sorry, Judge Williams, did
no,
I interrupt
no,
you?
But what about the fact that they're now saying there was an oral agreement? So we can't just rely on, you know, that Amendment 4, that if they had had an opportunity to respond, they would have raised that.
Certainly, Your Honor. I think what they're trying to get at is the issue in Matterhorn. The key is to the Matterhorn case is that in that case the parties had the NCR and Matterhorn had a universal agreement that contained the arbitration clause that was to govern their relationship. Subsequent to entering into the universal agreement, they NCR purchased a cash register pursuant to a separate written purchase order. In that purchase order, it had the opportunity to check a box incorporating the terms and conditions of the universal agreement, including the arbitration clause. It did not check that box. Matterhorn went on to complain about the cash register that it purchased pursuant to that superseding purchase order. And the issue for the court was whether the arbitration clause in the universal agreement could be stretched to incorporate disputes arising out of the subsequent allegedly superseding agreement. Here we know from the record, the documents that Nissan submitted and attached to its petition, what the dispute is. Nissan sent a notice of termination to Malati purporting to terminate the dealer agreement, which includes Amendment Number 4 and the arbitration clause. Malati filed a notice of protest with the board where it expressly protested Nissan's attempt to terminate the dealer agreement, including Amendment Number 4. Nissan has never purported to terminate any other type of agreement. And Nissan's contention is that there is no other agreement, but under the Illinois statutory scheme that governs the relationship between Nissan and Malati, the Illinois Motor Vehicle Franchise Act, Nissan cannot take a step to terminate any agreement with Malati without giving it a written notice that it's going to terminate that agreement. And so if the arbitrator considers Nissan's an attempt to terminate the dealer agreement and determines that it could not terminate that agreement because the agreement expired, then Nissan would have to, if it determined there was some other type of oral agreement, would have to go out and issue a separate notice of termination to terminate that agreement. And so that's currently not what's an issue. What is an issue, and the only thing that's an issue here, is our attempt to terminate the dealer agreement, including the arbitration clause. It's very clear that the parties have agreed to arbitrate anything arising out of or relating in any way to that dealer agreement. And since all that's at issue right now is our attempt to terminate the dealer agreement, that arbitration clause in Amendment Number 4 that Malati signed is what governs. If, as I said, the arbitrator later determines that agreement has expired, we'll have to start a whole different proceeding if we determine under the terms of that contract, that separate oral contract, if one exists, that we have the right to terminate.
Let me ask you this. On the question of the arbitrator's power to decide arbitrability, why is the provision in the JAMS rules enough to constitute clear and unmistakable evidence that Nissan and Malati agreed to let the arbitrator decide arbitrability? It looking to the rules of JAMS and dispute seems to be a rather indirect way of deciding whether the parties agreed to submit that, you know, the very issue to the arbitrator. we should be looking, it seems to me, for proof within the four corners of any agreement between the parties, or if, you know, there was an oral agreement that supersedes.
Again, Your Honor, I think there are two responses to that question. First, Malati has not put that particular argument in issue. It has never argued that JAMS Procedural Rule 10 doesn't clearly constitute an agreement to arbitrate arbitrability. Secondly, this is really no different than a situation where the parties agree to a forum selection clause where they say we will proceed before the state or federal courts of the state of Illinois, but don't necessarily state what procedural rules would govern their dispute.
Did I misunderstand you? In your summary of the argument, the third sentence that states, by consenting to proceed before JAMS, the parties agreed to follow the JAMS comprehensive rules, which provides that the arbitrator has the authority to determine arbitrability.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm not sure I understand.
I thought that your first argument
Malati does not contend that the JAMS rules are in any way unclear about the authority of the arbitrator to decide arbitrability. Malati agrees or does not dispute that those rules clearly give the arbitrator the authority to decide arbitrability.
What I'm trying to find out is why we shouldn't be looking for proof by looking at the agreement or the oral agreement.
The necessary impact of the agreement itself is that the JAMS rules will apply. The parties agreed clearly in their written amendment number 4 that...
Right, but his argument is, as, you know, Judge Williams reiterated, that the oral agreement has expressly abandoned Amendment 4. So why, if that's his argument, why are we going back to the JAMS rules, if that's his argument?
The dispute between the parties is framed by the pleadings before the Motor Vehicle Board. Nissan terminated the dealer agreement, including Amendment Number 4 that contains the arbitration clause. Malati is protesting Nissan's attempt to terminate that dealer agreement. It expressly states that in its notice of protest. Nissan has never made any attempt to terminate any other agreement between the parties. There is no dispute right now over any attempt by Nissan to terminate any agreement other than the written agreement. The arbitrator may at some point determine that Nissan can't terminate the dealer agreement because it expired. If that's the case, then case is over, and Nissan will have to go back and figure out what the terms of its agreement with Malati are and decide whether it has cause to terminate that agreement and then take steps to do so. Since all we're talking about right now is the dealer agreement, including Amendment Number 4, the only arbitration clause at issue is the one in Amendment Number 4, which clearly covers attempts to terminate that written dealer agreement. And so agreements to arbitrate arbitrability contained in Amendment Number 4 are the only ones that we're looking at right now, since Nissan hasn't made any attempt to terminate any type of other oral agreement.
But since Malati may have been deprived of notice and the opportunity to be heard on that very issue, isn't that the problem here? Isn't that what we should be zeroing in on?
No, Your Honor, because well, first of all, this court can handle that issue without remanding it. Secondly,
but how can we handle it when he's alleging that there's an oral agreement and we don't have anything on that? How can we handle it? I agree with you if there was no dispute in the record.
Is there anything in the written agreement that provides for amendments but only by writing?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is a new agreement an amendment or a change of the contract so that it has to be in writing?
That is true, Your Honor.
Is that pled that there's no oral argument because there can't be one by terms of the original agreement?
There is no pleading anywhere to that effect.
And all they're saying is they didn't have an opportunity to be heard, to even put those arguments down, to give it to the district court because they were misled by the court. Not misled, but the court said, we're not going to deal with that. I only want briefing on this one motion, period. And so they never responded.
Right, Your Honor. But what I'm saying is that its alleged oral agreement is irrelevant at this point because the only dispute between the parties is over the terms of the written dealer agreement. Nissan has only attempted to terminate the written dealer agreement. It has not taken any steps, as it must under the Illinois Motor Vehicle Franchise Act.
I assume it made its change in writing, or its demand in writing to change it. Terminate.
Yes, Your Honor, it did.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Brink.
Just academically, how could you change the terms of the written agreement orally?
We did not change the terms of a written agreement orally. The written agreement expired, and the parties have been operating under an oral
agreement. Well, there is no written agreement.
There is no written agreement.
It's only oral.
It's only oral at this point, Your Honor. And since expiration is the defense, and if a trial court were to find that this agreement expired, that would be a dispositive defense to the petition to compel arbitration. That's the defense we never had a chance to lay out below. The reason this court cannot decide it on appeal is that you don't have that record before you. Now, of course, Nissan would like to tell you that the dispute is limited to the matters that Nissan has raised within its petition to compel arbitration. That is a self-serving argument. I can understand why they would make it. But we've never had our day in court. If this case were back up here with a full record, perhaps you could then make that determination. The only other thing I'd like to raise in rebuttal is that the issue is not whether the JAMS rules themselves are clear and unmistakable. The issue is whether there's any ambiguity about whether the JAMS rules on committing the question of arbitrability to the arbitrator were incorporated effectively in Amendment 4. And as Judge Rovner implied, and we've argued in our brief, under the clear and unmistakable evidence test, that kind of indirect incorporation by reference is not sufficient to demonstrate the party's intention to forego their day in court. As the Supreme Court held in First Options, the normal presumption of committing a question to the arbitrator in general under an arbitration clause is reversed when the question is whether or not the parties have decided to commit the question of arbitrability to the arbitrator. On that issue, the presumption is that the parties intend to have a court decide the question, and that's why you need clear and unmistakable evidence. The other thing is you have a question of fact in the record. Nissan's demand for arbitration specifically cites Nissan's own rules as the basis for committing the question of arbitrability to the arbitrator. The Nissan rules were not adopted until after Amendment 4 was executed, and it's those Nissan rules that incorporate expressly the JAMS and dispute rules. Now, Nissan on appeal states that notwithstanding what they call a mistake, nonetheless, because the parties agreed to hire JAMS and dispute, they are assumed to have agreed to the JAMS and dispute rules. But Nissan demand at least creates a fact question in the record.
You don't think you're entitled as a matter of law to a jury question on whether or not it's arbitrable, do you?
On this record, Malati has demonstrated its entitlement to a jury question on arbitrability because of the fact questions in the record. And as we say in our pleadings, in our briefs rather,
if the court, however, found that your purported oral contract is not valid, it doesn't create any new rights for you. That would be the end of that, wouldn't it? That would be a matter of law, not a question of fact.
On which question, Your Honor?
Question whether there exists an oral contract.
If the court held that the oral contract did not exist?
Yeah, there was no such thing.
Well, even Nissan concedes that there's some kind of oral contract.
Well, I know, I just think my I don't want to drag it out any further.
Sure.
Okay. And then it ceases to be a jury question because if there is no contract, there's nothing to submit to the jury. And you don't have to respond to me because it doesn't make any difference. It's an abstraction. It'd have to be determination by the trial court before that could happen anyway. So.
The trial court would have to examine the question. May I have one sentence just to answer?
Absolutely.
The substantive defense to the arbitration demand is expiration, oral contract or no. And that's why I think we would still have our right to a jury. Thank you.
Thank you. And what a terrific day this is. Thank you very much.